Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. Welcome to Trapping Across Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. Well, we're going to talk about some something tonight with somebody that I think everybody's going to get a kick out of. We have Possum Skinner on here, and it starts a little goofy tonight because he thought he was going to be a smart aleck to me and put the squeeze on me and be the host and try to find ways to make me nervous, but he found out that coming up with questions off the top of your head may not be quite as easy as it sounds like. So I had to take over the reins again. But then I got to do more of a normal interview with Possum Skinner. And, he's a big cut up. Everybody knows him at conventions and everything. But he's pretty intelligent when it comes to trapping. And I'm glad I finally got him to sit down and talk with me about what he does. Before we get into that, let's go and get our sponsors, because they're the reason that Trapping Radio gets to stay on the air. When I have a sponsor on Trapping Radio, guys, I only deal with people that I would personally deal with. I guard who I have for a sponsor very, very seriously, because if I have questions about them, they're not going to be a sponsor. And the guys that are on sponsoring this or Wolfer Nation are all top-notch, and I know them very well, and I use them, and I buy stuff from them. And I'm glad that they are my sponsors. The first sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. You can reach them at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com. You can give Scott Painter, which is the owner, a call at 540-298-7227, Monday through Friday, 9 to 6 Eastern Standard Time. Now, he's got a really good video out on trapping coyotes. He also makes a brand of lures called Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. If you're looking for something else, maybe a changeup or something, give him a call, because he can hook you up with that. Now, Scott is running a special just for Trapping Radio listeners, where if you order $100 worth of supplies, and it doesn't take a whole lot to get there, it seems like nowadays, but he'll give you $5 off for doing nothing more than in the coupon part on his internet store, you type in radio for Trapping Radio. So if you tap in Trapping Radio, he's basically going to give you $5 for free. That's pretty cool. But he has all kind of different stuff, from boards to lures to traps and all kind of different things. He's got a shop in Virginia. He's buying fur this year. So if you're in Virginia, make sure to give him a call or give him an email and see what's going on with him, because he'll definitely take care of you at Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Our second sponsor this week is Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the first sponsor we had on Trapping Radio, and the oldest one so far. Jeb's just one of them good old guys that likes making deals, likes talking to trappers. He's also a fur buyer in the Oklahoma area. He goes in the surrounding states around there. So if you're piling up fur already, give Jeb a call, because you might just find out he's going to make you a deal that you're not going to be able to turn down. You can get a hold of him at OKTrapSupply.com. You can also call Jeb at 918-429-4648. Now, Jeb's also running a special for Trapping Radio listeners, and that's where you get a gallon of bobcat urine for $30. That's unheard of. That's wholesale prices, guys. I got four of them sitting on my porch right now, where they just came in from UPS. He's got good quality urine. So if you're looking for bobcat urine, even if you don't think you're going to need it this year at that price, I'd go ahead and get it for next year. Because what's going to happen, I'm going to kind of break this up on the sponsors. If you're looking at buying supplies and you think you're going to be able to always buy supplies this winter, there's so much stuff going out the door because there's so many people trapping right now, that if you're looking for bobcat urine, that may turn into looking like mink glands from a lure supply point of view, and you just ain't going to find them. So if you need something, you need to go ahead and get it, because it may not be there later on in the year. That's just a warning you, because there's a lot of stuff moving, and once bobcat urine and coyote urine and all that stuff is gone, it's not like they can squeeze any more out of them. So if you're needing cat urine, I definitely give Jeb a call at Oki Cable and Trap, at 918-429-4648 and get your Bobcat urine for $30 a gallon. That's a hell of a deal right there. Third sponsor this week is Wildlife Control Supply, and they're just wildlifecontrolsupply.com, real simple. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. Their international number is 860-844-0101. Alan Hoyt is the owner of that. And if you're looking for anything in the wildlife control side of things, they've got it. They're like the number one dealer on that. So if it's out there and it's good quality, you can get it from them. They've got proven solutions for wildlife control. They deliver value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry professionals. And that's exactly what they do. So if you're looking for that, it needs to be, as far as I'm concerned, a favorite on your computer if you're in the ADC business, because I know, and you know too, that you're going to run up against situations that you're going to need some type of strange trap or something to do with exclusion that you may not be able to run down to Lowe's or somewhere and get. So you need to get where you can get a hold of Alan at Wildlife Control Supplies, because he will definitely take care of you. Our last and not least sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. These guys are pretty much famous in the trapping industry for how fast they get orders out. I was doing some searches and I came across some stuff off Trapper Man, and people were saying they were ordering like at 10:30 in the morning, and they were getting to where their order was shipped by like 2 in the afternoon that same day. I mean, these guys hustle. They really, really try to get your stuff out the door the best they can. And you can reach F&T at fntpost.com. That's Foxtrot November Tango Post.com. You can give them a call at 989-727-8727. Now, they're running specials this month. They have BMAC full-link gauntlets. They're running specials on 1.5 Dukes, 2-prong, 3/8-inch trap drags, and a tongue twister. I don't know why Jeff Dunlap has got to make titles like this, but it's Dunlap's Big Pile Very Berry DP Sauce. I think he should add a few more D's and B's and make it about 6 more words and it'll be good to go. But they're running that on special for $11. That's Dunlap's Big Pile Very Berry DP Sauce. They're running antifreeze and also running a special on Darren Freebro's Animalistics Woods, Roads, and Ridges DVD. And that's for coyote trapping. Anything that you're looking, whether it be for trapping, whether you're a dog hunter, whether you're predator calling, F&T will definitely take care of you. You can also see pictures and everything of the new Freedom Brand Dog Proof Trap. And I'm going to talk a little bit about something when I get done with the sponsors, whether it's a new product that QSR is either came out with already or is getting ready to, because I've got my little grubby hands on about 4 dozen of them right now. Well, I guess that'll end our sponsors, and that'll give me, that's not like a nice little lead into what I was getting ready to say. Dog-proof traps are a speed tool. It doesn't matter what brand you use, it's a speed tool, or it should be. It's the advantage, you're not having to dig in the ground, you're not having to bed anything, you're not having to dig holes. It's a speed tool. You find coon locations, you slam that son of a gun in the ground, and you get your butt moving, and that's how you can rack up coon really, really fast with a dog-proof trap. Now, QSR from Freedom Brand, they've got something out that I just got my hands on. It's a really, really cool idea. Now, I don't know if these are for sale yet, and I may be in trouble for saying this right now, because they may not want people calling in if they don't have it. I should have asked, but since it's on my mind, I'm going to go and talk about it. I'm a big component user of drags. I use saber-tooth drags. Everybody listens to this and knows that. I think drags make trapping more fun. They make it less energy abusive. You don't keep traps in the ground as long as you would if you've got to pull stakes. It's just a better way of going about things, in my opinion. I also, for years, I've been using drags with DP traps. I can set the trap, bait the trap, drop the drag on the ground, stick the thing in the ground, and go about my business. Now, there's a lot of parts of the country where I could somewhat do that, but I'd have to use my shovel and cut in something into the ground, because the ground would be so hard, or it would be frozen, or it'd be rock, or it would just not be very easy to stick the trap in the ground, and I got to sit there and piddle around. That really hurt the speed aspect to me, as far as I could tell, with the DP trap, because it slowed me down. That's pretty simple. It slowed me down. Well, Freedom Brand come out with a Sabertooth Junior. And like I said, I don't know if it's on the market yet, but it probably will be pretty soon. The Sabertooth Junior is a smaller Sabertooth drag, and it's for raccoons. It's also going to be a heck of a drag for mink and muskrats, gray fox, red fox, stuff like that. It's smaller than the regular one. But what they've done is they've added the bracket for the Freedom Brand Dogproof Trap on that drag. Now, I want you to think about how fast this is now. I can grab two components with me. I've got the staking system. I've got the trap. I've got everything I need. So I can grab two traps that are wrapped around drags with some chain. I can get out of the truck. I can go over to the coon trail, unravel the drag, set it right in the middle of the trail. Because the bracket's on there, I can set the trap, bait the trap, put it in the bracket, and set the other one. I'm talking the fastest, hands down, the fastest way to ever set dogproof traps are using these things. It is amazing. You'll get stuff in the ground so fast, you'll be worried when you get back in the truck if you actually set anything. Because you put the drag in, you push one of the spikes in the ground, set the trap, stick it in the bracket, bait it, and you're gone. It's literally as fast as I'm telling you to do it. I'm not having to cable off to a tree. I'm not having to beat a stake in. I'm not having to pull stakes. I'm not having to do anything. When I catch a coon on one of these things, it's a high quality smaller drag. That's what's so neat about this. They got spikes on them just like the big saber tooth. The farthest a coon has gotten so far is about 20 feet, and that was in open hardwoods, guys. So you're not going to go look for your coon. This is not like using a little rebar drags or something like that. This is a high-quality drag. But the greatest advantage I've seen for this is just pure speed. It makes you want to go set more DP traps because they go in so fast. And I don't have to worry. It's like they've taken the concept of using a kill pole with snares, and they put it with dogproof traps, and it's just up that game one more notch. And that's the only way I'm going to be setting them from now on. You know, I've got a lot of my big saber-tooths that I'm probably going to be getting their brackets and welding on my other saber-tooths. That way, all the DPs I've got, I can use this system, because it was the neatest thing I've ever done in my life. I got to do it when I was filming with Alan Probst for their TV show. I've got to do it now on some control jobs. I just got back from Alabama where I was giving instruction, and the guy's into the quail side of things, and he's real worried about his nest predators, and his hands aren't as strong, and he's having trouble setting the dukes, and you got to cable them off or put the stakes in. He was using rebar stakes, and I showed this thing to him, and his eyes just lit up, because once you see it in practice, holy cow, do you realize how fast this system is? Regardless if you're using the Freedom Brand traps or the Sabertooth Junior, whatever trap you're using, if you can find a way to integrate the DPs that you're using with a drag, you're talking about rocking and rolling when you're out on the coon line. Well, let's go ahead and go in our interview with Possum Skinner, because as normal, he's highly entertaining. It's always somewhat educational, and it's always a good time. So here's Possum Skinner.
Hey, this is Possum Skinner, and we're on Trapping Across America. I'm tonight's guest host, and my guest here is Clint Locklear from, Dunlap, Tennessee?
I believe so.
There you go. Some of y'all may have heard of Clint. So, you know, we'll talk about whatever comes up here.
Well, you know the reason you're on that side of the microphone instead of this side, right?
Because I don't do interviews.
That's right. So I was like, okay, then big boy, you'll be the host.
That's right. Yeah, I've got to pull something out of you, because you don't really come off of anything other than on DVD.
Well, as doing as you're going to find out, you've got a prod.
Yeah.
Just not too hard.
All right.
And then, so what would you like to talk about?
Well, we probably can't get into that here on a radio show, but, you know... But I guess we can start with like where we're at this weekend. You want to go ahead and tell the people where we're at?
Well, we're both at he sponged some of my space off my table on the end down there, but we're up at Blue Ridge Outdoors, and we're doing he's calling it Trappers Appreciation Day.
Right, open house.
And, I mean, he's got a nice building. I'm
impressed.
Yeah,
it's really nice. It really is.
He's got all kind of stuff in here as far as supplies goes. I was not expecting this much stuff because there's a lot of money in this inventory.
Yeah, it's quite an inventory here.
And then he's got his building on the side where we were at. We did demos. Somehow I got talked into two.
Yeah.
And while we're on the two demos a day thing, if you work for a state organization, I will never, ever do two demos a day again or in the same show. It's taxing, to say the least.
Yeah, because you tackled a two-hour demo in West Virginia this year, and I witnessed that. That was a long endeavor there.
You know, I got a story about that demo. I'm like an hour and 30 minutes into this demo, and I've never done a two-hour demo, and I'm trying to, my brain's going, keep talking, keep talking, keep talking. Where's the water? Keep talking. And I kept talking, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody come over, and right next to me, inside the demo area, I don't mean on the edge of the demo area, I mean in front of the little display thing they've got, and bring a chair. And I'm thinking, okay, there's an older guy here that finally had enough guts to get up here because he couldn't see what I was doing because he's half blind. And I look over there, and I see somebody grinning at me out of the corner of my eye.
I remember seeing that myself.
Yeah, I figured you did.
Yeah.
Now, what made you think to do that?
I just...
You weren't thinking.
I wasn't thinking, but yeah, I mean...
You're trying to screw me up, what you're trying to do.
I didn't say a word, did I? I just took a seat. And
in the middle of the
demo. You were the trooper. You just kept plugging right along, looked at me. Like, what are you doing? And kept on going.
You know, it's funny that you did that, because when you did that trying to be a smart aleck, there was several guys that were trying to see what I was doing that then had the capacity.
I broke the ice.
Yeah, and then the guys came up and stood behind the demo so they could see everything real clear.
Yeah.
So that, you know, really, that didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
And since you didn't say anything, it didn't bother me anyway. I was waiting for you to.
Well, just be glad we went with taking the seat out by the dirt holes thing, because you probably wouldn't have appreciated the other multiple ideas we ran through before I did that.
And so, what were they?
Once again, that's something we might not want to talk about on a radio show, but.
Okay, as the host, what are you going to, since you don't do interviews, I'll let you be the interviewer. So what are you going to interview me about?
I don't have a clue on that either, but we'll think of something to talk about. Trapping related here. Now that we're here, you did a coyote demo today. Got a pretty good response from the crowd. Clint really knows how to turn people on to asking questions. He does have a gift for gab. I mean, he's a man who can make you think. But either you love him or you hate him, but he can make you think. And he got a lot of people interested in this through his demos today, and it's kind of impressive to watch somebody to do that, you know, when people actually listen to somebody and you can see their instant response. And I mean, I'm impressed with that. So
how many do you give demos a lot?
No.
Have you ever gave a demo?
Oh yeah. That's just not my thing.
Is loudmouth and as you go around doing all kind of crazy, I just don't see, are you afraid of it?
No, that's just not my bag. I got the J.C. Connors mentality of doing demos.
Oh.
So, that's good company there. I mean, J.C.'s a heck of a nice guy.
It is. But I figured you would be like Mark June on crack, as crazy as you always act.
Yeah. No, I just, like right now, we're fine here talking one-on-one.
But well, quit looking over at the microphone.
That's where my drink is sitting. That's the only reason there. But
so what comes to your mind that you would want to ask me? If you just wanted to ask me anything that I may or may not tell you the answer to, what would it be?
I believe the table of the interview has just changed. You're asking me questions.
Well, I'm trying to prod the prodder.
There you go. That's kind of harder to come up with a question there than... you may have stumped the unstumpable on something very simple.
Are you relinquishing your role?
It might be easier. If we did, it might be
okay,
easier.
Give me my microphone back.
There you go.
Well, see, this if this is what it took to get you to do an interview, it was worth it.
I don't know about all that, but so, you know how many viewers or listeners you're losing right now by just even the attempting to interview?
Nah, not the infamous.
I don't know about all that.
Well, it's okay. I'm gonna be the. I can see the blank stare and the panic in the back of your eyes, so I don't want to do that to you. You're having a trouble on Facebook. What is it?
Oh, hey, Facebook finds me to be a fictitious character, I think that's how they worded it, actually a fictitious person. And they notified me that Facebook is a place for people to interact with one another using their real name and everything. But when I set up my account, I set it up as Possum Skinner because, I mean, a lot of people
that's
knew
who
me
you
as
are.
That. Exactly. That was just the, I got labeled that, and a lot of people knew me by that, so I just went with that. Could have used my real name, but I mean, yeah, whatever. But now Facebook decides that's not good enough. People have accounts for their dogs, their chickens, and everything else, but I can't be a part of it.
Well, see, I don't see why that's any different. Like I said earlier, Kid Rock's name is not Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga is not Lady Gaga.
No.
The great and awesome Possum Skinner, his name is really not Possum Skinner, but it's no different than Kid Rock.
Right. So now they just say until I, you know, comply with using my real name, that my account will be locked.
Do you have an email that they've corresponded with you with? Because here's the reason I'm asking. What I want to do is I want to, on Trappin' Radio, when I run this, I want to have a link at the bottom of the page. And it's going to be like, you know, Save the Possum Skinner or something on Facebook. But we're going to have a link where an email, so everybody can call in and bitch at Facebook and say, you know, why is Possum Skinner not there? Why, you know, we need to come up with something. You know, I'm thinking we need to say Possum Skinner is gay, and why do you hate gay people?
Just to get them, this is going great.
Just to get them to go, you know, we can't say you're black. They got your picture.
That's true.
So we've run the race card down. Now we got to go to the sex card. So we're gonna say Possum Skinner, you're just not with him on Facebook because he's gay, and we're going to run with that.
Let's stick with lesbian, dude, on that side of that.
Well, we can do that. But, I mean, if they get – what I'm thinking, though, in all seriousness, if they get 500 people or 300 people or whatever it would be that would take the time to send that email,
right,
that they would go, okay, he's a real person, you know, because it's just what it is. And I may even come up with a form letter. I don't know. I'll come up with something by the time this runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get you back on Facebook. You know why I want you on Facebook?
I don't know.
Because not only do you come up with some crazy stuff you talk about, every now and then, when the Clint bashers come out in force, I can almost always count on one person at least checking the way they're thinking. I've seen that on Trapper Man and stuff, and I appreciate it. And it's not that you're taking up for me. I can tell you're basically saying, just think about what you're saying because it ain't making no sense.
Yeah, and that's true.
So for that reason, I need you to have my back on Facebook if that goes crazy.
All right, we can do that.
And we'll drop the gay stuff after Facebook's let you back on.
Yeah.
So you're from Virginia.
Right, yeah. Southeast Virginia.
Southeast. So you're close to the coast.
Yep, tidewater area.
And that's swampy.
Yeah.
And how did you get into trapping?
Well, years ago, my family, my dad, he raised bobaway quail ever since he was a teenager. And if you have any poultry or game birds or anything like that, you're going to have predators coming in. And that's kind of how I drifted into it, just keeping the stuff around the buildings, you know, from getting into, you know, the buildings and causing damage or, you know, just stressing the stock can actually kill it just by being on the outside. They know they're out there and they fly, you know, stress the birds, they can have other disease and everything else come in. But then it just got a little bit more and a little bit more. And
how old were you when you started?
Oh, I was in early teens.
And did you have somebody to help show you? Or you
not a soul.
So you had to go the hard route?
Yep, not a soul. Not even a book. I just.
What was your first set? Do you remember?
Long spring, a single long spring, catching possums.
Is that where possum skinner come from?
No, actually, that didn't come from that. That came many years later, actually. But the we can talk about that if you want to.
We'll get there. So you started tramping out of necessity.
Right.
And you probably got hooked into it.
It did. It's addictive. Once you get that, you know, you figure things out. And kind of like the challenge. I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm not overly smart, but I can figure things out. If something's not working, I'm going to try to figure it out. And that little bit of challenge, because everything, every critter I went after, a little time to come to you, you figure it out. Didn't have anybody telling me why I was right or wrong, but I knew it worked and knew it didn't work.
So when did you start going to conventions and stuff?
I used to go to conventions, but I never really traveled around for them. Just
like
I'd go
the
to
state a, here in Virginia.
Right. Because it was just something I just didn't get into until probably 6 or 7 years ago. Maybe closer to 10, but yeah, a good 6 or 7. I've hit multiple states every year.
You know what the shows? I'm starting to wonder if you have some type of down deep fetish to be a roadie.
I don't know. I've been called a roadie. I've been called a lot worse, but I've definitely been called a roadie. And I've traveled many a mile with Newt Sterling too. So, and we did that.
And now you're kind of like Scott's sidekick.
Yep.
Have you been anybody else's sidekick?
No, not really a traveling sidekick. But I have stepped behind the booth of many of people. I mean, I've taken money over the table at conventions for a lot of people. So, I mean, I feel good if they can trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people, I look at all these guys like you and all these other people that people look up to. And they are all they think of that you are these guys on the DVDs and the Clint Locklear this. I just think of you as Clint Locklear, just another guy I know.
That's all I am.
There you
guy.
Go. But, I mean, I still look up to you, but not for trapping reasons, you know. Y'all should see his face on that one. That was a mean look.
So how did you come up with Possum Skinner?
I didn't actually. A good friend of my dad, I trapped his farm for years and years and years. And his wife's father got elderly and he couldn't live on his own. He moved in with them and he was always at the farm. And I'd have to come right up through past their house and to access the farm. So I came out after checking traps one day, and I had a good run on possums. I ain't gonna lie, I mean, it just happens sometimes. But I had like 6 or 7 possums in the back of the truck, along with a few other things. But the old man asked me, he said, "What you gonna do with them?" And I said, "Well, I'll skin them." And he's like, "Really, you skin possums?" I said, "Oh yeah, you know, everything adds up." And back then I actually did. So next time I was on the farm here, coming in there, he stopped me right there as I was heading on back behind the barns, and he said, "Oh yeah, I seen that old possum skinner coming." So every time after that, he just called me possum skinner. And then I guess more people started adding on to knowing possum skinner is when I signed up a trapper man, like in the late '90s or right around 2000, probably 99, somewhere in that area. And then it just snowballed. I couldn't rob a bank between here and the left coast and not be picked up in 24 hours or less, pretty much. But well, yeah, that's how that got started.
You know, we could have called you, I don't know, like cow killer or wolfer man or something.
It could all change with whatever would have been in the back of the truck that day. But I guess it just stuck. It could be worse. And people had changes around the possum plucker or everything else. I mean, you name it. But
well, what's your real name?
I'm Ed Robbins.
Ed Robbins.
Yep.
Now when you're trapping, I can tell from some of the conversations we have and some of the posts that I've seen you make online that you really think through stuff.
At times I do.
You know, I mean you cut up a lot, but you think about a lot of different stuff. And I'm gonna go through some animals, I'm gonna quiz you. So we're gonna get the possum skinner.
I didn't do good in school either.
Theology of A, B, and C. Let's start with otter. How long have you been trapping otter?
Really, seriously, probably 10 or 12 years. Before that, they were just incidentals, and then I'd say a good 10 to 12 years of actually catching numbers of otters on purpose.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question, and if your answer is no, it's not me in a belittling way at all, I promise you. I'm just curious. Have you joined the 100 Otter a Year Club?
I have been there.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So are you a 330 guy, snare guy, foothold guy, whatever it takes guy?
I'm a whatever it takes guy.
So you use all three of those pieces of equipment?
Yes, I do.
What is your favorite?
I like a 280. But I tell you where I really started switching over, I started doing the 220s. 220, 220. 220 takes no prisoners. And if you can set them legally.
Can you?
In the state of Virginia, you can. As long as you don't use any bait or lure or anything else, you can just blind set them. And I'm going to tell you one thing. If you're into snaring in 220s, you're at an advantage because you can read subtle sign.
Mm-hmm.
And both can kind of, go in the same place. But 220s take no prisoners. You can stack up fur. Because, I'm setting for otter, but I'm catching coons. I'm catching mink. You can catch bobcats in 220s setting trails. Everything, gray fox, red fox. It didn't take me long to figure out. 220s is a bread and butter trap.
So what is the type of trail location you're looking for?
I like a little high piece of the high ground in the swamps and tight areas. Most people set crossovers and all that kind of stuff. But I look through trails through like phragmites in the swamps on the edges. All those trails, they're highways. It's just easier for everything to walk them trails. And it's like a no-brainer. It don't take a whole lot of trap and know-how to put a 220 on a trail. But I hate to out myself on that, but that's just the truth. I'll be honest with you. But you got to pick and choose because you can't set them all. But you have to know how to read a little bit about the sign. But 220s take no prisoners. I love them, but like I said, I like a 280.
Now, when you say a high area in a swamp, I'm picturing those little bitty islands that are
exactly
about 10.
A lot of
10.
Them are used for toilets.
So that's what you're looking for them.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a toilet, but they just seem to like to hit those little higher pieces as they're coming through. And otters are fickle, and it's hard to figure them out. But you can, if they've been there once, they're coming back.
So what is your procedures for setting a 220? Are you using stands? Do you camouflage, not camouflage?
I use H stands, and I got away from that a little bit there. I like sticks. I'll cut them ahead of time and let them dry. And I know it sounds silly to carry sticks into the woods, but it's a whole lot. I laugh at myself about that. But it's a whole lot quicker to have 5-gallon buckets jammed with, the right diameter sticks. Grab two for every trap that you got and just go instead of looking for the right stick on location. A lot of guys will just laugh at that, and I laugh at myself, like I said. But it works for me.
Are you a blouse man?
I like blouse.
Even though you was bitching at your triggers earlier.
All right, they do. They have a very soft wire trigger that you will have to replace very soon, but the trap is sound. I like them. They stabilize real easy.
Well, do you want to talk about what you use for replacement triggers? Because that's hillbilly ingenuity. You don't have to if you don't
want
to.
I mean, that doesn't bother me. It's landscaping fabric staples. It's a big wire staple. You have to bend one side back to fit it in the groove of, the little groove that's in mm-hmm. there. Piece there, but it works. They're rigid wire, it is a wire, and they work real good and they're cheap, just like me. Not that I work good, but I'm cheap.
Well, I need to go to that because what I normally replace those with is stainless steel welding rods.
Yeah.
And those will have to be cheaper.
Yeah, they're definitely cheaper. They come in multiple sizes, everything down to like 110s. They got them like the 110 size all the way up.
You just pick them up at Home Depot or
Lowe's? Yeah, most any place like that. Any place you can buy that landscaping fabric will have the pin to hold it down.
So are you painting your traps, or are they black or brown?
I used to dip everything. And I tell you, if I could manufacture a true good patina rust color, color of a dip or dye, I love that.
I'm from the Appalachians. What color's patina?
Well, patina is like a aged slickness of the rust. It's like a trap, an old rusty trap. It's either dry rust on there or it's got like a, a good rich old patina. A wood has patina. Yeah, it looks old and slick.
Okay.
I mean, those are, that's a perfect color to me. It blends in everything. I don't like black body grips. The only thing I'll dye black is foot traps because they're in the ground. But black, it might as well be white because it stands out like a sore thumb.
So are you camouflaging those with leaves and grass and brush, or do you leave them? I'm trying to get to, if I was behind you, what would I be seeing when you're set, when it looked like?
In the body grips there, it's a, I like a mud brown kind of color body grip, and they blend in with the dead marsh grasses, phragmites. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. But
well, explain what that is in case some of the...
It's a very invasive, I guess it's a reed type grass.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have one piece of it, you will have 100 acres of it. And it's perfect though. I mean, deer, everything, the trails that go through there, they're like mini highways. It's just like protective. It's got aerial cover. The muskrats are in it too, down my way.
It's like miniature cattails.
It's kind of like that. If a lot of people call it reed grass or stuff like that. I mean, it's got 100 different regional names, I guess. But it's the rats will dig the roots and eat the roots of that. And it's got good overhead cover, so I guess that's one reason they like that also.
So you're picking, I'm sure you're picking a tight spot in the trail.
Yeah.
And then, okay, you are you covering the bottom of the jaws and moving some of the reeds to block the outline?
No, most of those trails, they're pretty slick. And I don't bother breaking up the outline of the trap too much at all. I will take a couple pieces of the phragmites and bend them at an angle. After I got the trap stabilized, I'll kind of just break a few pieces down or either break a few pieces off, stick them to the side just to kind of make him crowd the trap a little lower, because I believe in not raising the trap up off the trail too much. A couple, 3 fingers off the trail is good for me.
So and you're not setting them flat on the ground then?
Almost. And I have no problem with doing it right flat on the ground, to be honest. And I'll pick up everything. It's just, it's kind of fun what you're going to have next in that 220 in a trail like that. Because seriously, the gray fox run those trails. I mean, bobcat, beaver.
Isn't that something, a bobcat standing? I mean, you see a bobcat walking.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you're saying because I've caught dozens and dozens of cats in coon trails with 220s.
Yep.
And you're looking at it going, they had to see the trap and get down and figure out some way to contort their body.
Yep.
To get in the thing.
Yeah. That's just like the coon thing. Everybody talks about putting their coon traps high up. Mm-hmm. You know, they like them almost 6 inches off. You know, maybe it's because I got a smaller, you know, coon.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
You know, I believe that, but even deer hunting, I'm just observing coons. Where I come from, I have to say, most of them have their head low and their butt high. They're not walking, you know, with their head high. So it just all falls together. Like I said, I figure out what works and what don't. It don't take you long, I mean. Will a coon go over a low trap sometimes? Sure he will. Some of them are just ornery. Some of them are just going to do things just because. But yeah, the low works for me. That's how I can sum that up.
So what are you doing with your footholds?
The footholds for what, otter?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a good beaver set. If you're beaver trapping, you're otter trapping also. I believe that, especially with foot traps. Mud is a universal attractor. I don't care what you're after, whether it's canines or dirt, whether it's dry dirt or if it's mud. I think it's a universal curiosity there. And otters will come to slick mud, just like an old beaver set. So any good beaver set, I think, is fairly decent otter set if you have the otters to catch.
So you're not making dedicated otter sets?
At times I do. At times I do. And in certain places, I'll even go as far as doing high pocket sets.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the otter slowed down because he's usually so fickle, he's not really interested in really working a set. But if he's like going over a crossover, or you have a wading pool, a little settling pool there at the end of large culverts or something like that, that's a perfect place for a baited pocket set. And all I do there is they take a little too much time to put in than just setting the body grip and moving on to the next spot. But you can do a double vertical or double horizontal hole set, you know, like pocket set, and put the trap right below, centered of your holes, have opposing angle holes mm-hmm. in the bank, trap right in the center, and he'll work that. But you've got to have him slowed down to where he's going to see that and be so intrigued to work it. Because I've tried it in other places, and, you know, it's just you're peeing in the wind.
I mean, you sell lures.
Right.
And it's not rabbits or whatever. When I looked at your sticker today. I don't have my glasses on, but.
That was really funny, though. It was fun.
Well, I was pulling your chain a little bit, but
yeah.
I smelled something you gave me that smelled really good. Is it liquid? And you said you use that on otter.
Yeah, the whisker bender. Yeah.
And are you putting that in the hole or above the hole?
I put it in the hole, but I tell you something else I use that set is, and it's not accessible to everybody, and that's the shedder bodies from peeler crabs, from soft shell crabs. Otters love crab. And I got a friend who commercial fishes and crabs, and when they're pulling the shedders off the tables, the sheds, they just drop them in 5-gallon buckets. Now, they usually throw them away, and I put them in the freezer. And otters will, you make like a big pocket set, throw some of the crab back up in there.
I'd say it's got good eye appeal.
Yeah, it does. But I tell you, on that set also, something I didn't mention is if you have the more sheer the bank, the more it's otter oriented, because if not, every coon in the world is going to work that. So if you have a sheer bank, the coon is in a little bit deeper water, the coon's not going to come down and work that set. So the trap's going to be there waiting on an otter, not have a coon in it when the otter comes by.
Oh, you're going to be making people mad now, because if you run your fish oil trail up a straight up bank, it's 12 foot tall, every coon comes down there. I've seen it in video, man. It's got to be true.
No, I don't believe that either. And I tell you, that's something else. You know, this might be zipping off to the side here a little bit. You're talking about that straight up. I got into doing fake slides for otters. And one thing I noticed about a lot of slides everywhere I've trapped, most of it, if it's a true otter trail coming out of there, going up to a toilet or something, from a low bank to a high bank, he never has a straight trail. You can do that for beaver. Beaver will come straight up. I've noticed otters like to angle that. And they're also, if you got a high bank and a low bank, you're always going to find your otters on that higher bank. They like that little bit of elevation for a toilet.
Well, you know, I know exactly what you're saying, because it seems like when they're coming upstream, it's just more natural for them to angle to the bank and go up the bank.
Yep.
Instead of trying to turn their body.
And that's another point there, you know, not to cut you off there, but in the bends or like curves, for some reason, they're just great places also. That's where you find a lot of natural toilets already. And I've also found that's another place to make fake slides. And I've started slides like that. And it's funny because, I mean, I've even taken the time when I initiated them to take a shovel and dig out like a little divot there. And even going up to the top and running water down, slicking it up. And some of those places I started 7, 8, 10 years ago. And now they're 3 foot deep where things have been using them mm-hmm. that long. But I started that. I initiated that, and they just kept using it. So I keep setting it.
What are you setting on these trails, 220s, 280s?
It's like a snare. A lot of times I do snare. I mean, a lot of times if that otter sees a 220 bear, he'll go around that thing. So a lot of times I'll set snares when I see that happening. But you asked me earlier about brushing them in. I use a lot of red cedar, because where I'm at, it's a whole lot of red cedar, and it really narrows mm-hmm. down things, and you can get them to go right through that 220 that way. But I've seen them avoid a 220 or not catch something on a trail. I've got a 220 set up at the top, and I'll swap it out for a snare, and bam, you got the otter. So he's coming through there, but he just don't want nothing to do with that square.
I think a lot of people with pressure on otter, I think because people don't deal with stuff every day when they're trapping, and it's a short period of time when they get to trap with a job and fore and after work, they don't respect what they're going after or the instincts of that animal I saw what you're talking about in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Left and right. I mean, there was a whole new trails around people's traps.
Yeah.
And every day I drive by, I'd have to smile because the guy never even moved his trap.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the grass has been run over so much it's dead. And I mean, the otter just move right around them things.
They won't mind going over something. That's the thing, too. I mean, I see that sometimes, too. Everybody puts the, like a 330 on the bottom, hoping they're going to go underneath that log like a beaver. They ain't got no problem going over it. Yeah, I mean, there's cures for that, but pretty much you just catch them down the line. But
so, okay, so in your otter, so what about when you're trapping in the water? There's going to be a lot of guys that will be trying to catch otter. And I'm going to give out your GPS of your swamp on the bottom of the show notes there.
Yeah. Go right for it. I'll provide you the coordinates. Take a lot of skeeter spray.
So when you when you're trapping in the water, or do you set traps in the water?
Yeah, I do.
Is it kind of like Claudie does, where you're just trying to block up runs and choke points?
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts on gang setting those? Or?
I gang set everything, whether I'm going after coon, otter, beaver. I believe if I make a stop there, if I like putting in a little small area, I may put a dozen traps. That's something else that a lot of people might laugh at. But you know what? If I open a truck door, hey, I can check 12 traps within a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. And it stacks up fur. It really does. And, I mean, I multi-species trap, too. So that works for me. And if somebody who's just running, you know, just wants to run otter, you know, you might not want to take the time with the other incidentals. But hey, in a good fur market, take everything you can, whether it's a rat or, you know, even coon now for me.
Or possums.
Well, I got to be honest, I don't know how in the world I could even hold the name possum skinner anymore, because I haven't skinned a possum in quite a few years.
You're letting us down, man.
Yeah, I hate to do that, but I'll be honest with you. I just, no love for possum.
So, is there anything that stands out in your mind about if someone was trying to figure out how to get into the otter trapping, just any advice at all on that animal?
Have patience.
That's a good one.
Definitely, and if you've got three traps and a little bit of time, you're going to be frustrated. Because two things I think you got to have, or three actually, you got to have the otters. I think that's a lot of people forget that, whether you're trapping coyotes or whatever. You're not going to make a big catch if you don't have them to catch at all. And you got to have a lot of traps out because otters move around.
What's a lot of traps? What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess that would be a hard one to answer, because what I think is a lot and somebody else.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. What
200 traps, I think, is a decent attempt at running otters, if you're really targeting otters.
And that's combining wet, dry, right, conibears, snares, yep, footholds, everything.
Right.
And so you're probably covering a decent amount of ground.
A fair amount of ground. And I won't mention no names, but it's kind of funny because I know one guy, he runs close to 200 miles to do the same thing. And I won't tell you how ridiculously short of an area I can make a loop and get almost the same results. But
where you're at, though, has got a lot of water.
I mean,
I've never trapped in that part of Virginia, but I've been through there a couple of times. And there's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I stay off the big water. The creeks and everything else, that's where they're at mostly, too.
Well, one thing I've noticed on big water, you can catch otter, but you can't, at least to me, I haven't figured out how to, you know, catch big numbers of them on big water because it's so sporadic and they can go anywhere.
They're a little more concentrated in the creeks, and especially in Virginia, in that area, come February, about the second week of February, if they ain't turned on, they never will. And that's when, I mean, they're getting a little late, you know, some people might say something about the, you know, singe and all that stuff. Hey, that's another whole topic. But when they start, when that otter rut kicks in and they're moving the males, you're going to start hammering them.
Well, I always get tickled at that. You know, I remember when otter went from $20 to $40, and the guys that were going to West Tennessee like I was, we thought we were getting freaking rich at $40.
I do. I remember that myself.
And then now you got otter that's bouncing around 100, and if it's singed and it brings 60, well, you're still getting rich 0.5,
but you feel like you got robbed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very relevant. I got a feeling when muskrats get below $5, which they will one day.
Oh yeah.
People are going to be going,
I think when they get below $10, you're going to hear people grumbling.
Yeah. I mean, you know how many thousands of muskrats I've sold for less than two?
Hey, I remember under a dollar myself.
Because the first time I really got serious about muskrats, it was another one of those I thought I was rich moments. Mm-hmm. I got $4.35. It was unheard of.
I remember when they broke like the $5 mark, and that was just, I mean, wow.
It's a rat, for goodness sake.
You're right.
So what do you do for rats? Do you target rats, or do you?
Not a whole lot. I do and I don't. I do pick up a lot when I run the 220s. You got out a lot of 220s in the back tidal river, you know, back coves and stuff like that, in still waters. You pick up a lot of it. I guess it would be incidental. But
Are they going up those trails? How you're catching most of them?
Yeah, they're mostly at the head of it, like where you find cattails up back up in there that far. And, I mean, you catch a rat. It's not so bad that you catch a rat now when he might be $12, $14, but he's still not a, you know, $100 otter. But I don't care about that. As long as there's something there, I mean, I'll gripe about hauling it out.
Now, are you running a boat or canoe or truck or what? How are you getting around?
A lot of it I do by ATV and trails like that through the swamp. And some of it I do a little boat. But a lot of it I'll walk. I'll put a boat in there and use it like a water wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the water gets too deep, I'll just slide over a spot and keep on walking. But a lot of it, you couldn't get a boat in there. And a canoe would be all right, but I use like a 10-foot John boat. And it's hard to get through some of the tight places in there with that. But if I don't have to put a boat in the water, I'm not upset.
Well, sometimes, though, it just gives you access you couldn't get on foot.
Yeah.
You know, because that canoe that I got this year, I got that for the whole purpose of there's dump ponds around the Tennessee River. I can pull up, jerk it off the trailer, get in there, and I can walk around them ponds.
Mm-hmm.
But I can get around it 10 times faster in that canoe and just hop and hop and hop. And I've had to do that otter trapping before.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever trapped. You ever trapped in Mississippi?
Yeah.
Okay. The law they got where you got to be 100 feet off a maintained road. Well, you drive through a swamp, there ain't nothing for 100 yards. You know, you can't make a set. You know, yeah. I mean, it's – so, I mean, you've got to do stuff like that. So, you don't target rats, per se.
Not really, no.
So, I noticed in your pictures that you've got a lot of gray fox.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like you're used to. You said
there's not nearly the same numbers that we had in the past, but, yeah, we still – that's mainly we got gray fox and a few coyotes that are moving in. Yeah.
Mm. Do you have red fox down there?
Very few. Very few.
Because
where we're sitting at here, right here in this area where Scott's shop is located, this is part of the the Virginia fox belt. A lot of good quality red fox come from this area. But there's a lot of competition for ground here too.
Well, that's what it seems like for here.
It really is.
I saw there's quite a few people here.
Yeah. But
so what is your I've said this before, but gray fox aggravate me to death. I'm a coyote trapper. I learned how to coyote trap. Even when I put the trap up close, I can't do it right. So I went to cages. So what are you doing to keep them little boogers? Because I swear they can repel off a tree and get my bait out of the hole.
Yeah, I think they might just do that sometimes. But you know, everybody, I heard exactly what you said. I've heard that many times. And I don't consider myself good or, you know, I'm just an average trapper. But grays, I don't seem to have any trouble with. I've sooner have troubles with coyotes than I will with grays. And I love crowding a hole, and I still catch coyotes crowding a hole in a gray fox set.
Do you think it's because you have a lot of grays?
I think it's probably because that's what I'm most well-versed in. I did the most of, or I don't know, it just – maybe it was just because at the time I had the most gray fox, you know, and the little buggers just kind of made me look like a rock star just because of what I had there. And I'm a dirt hole kind of guy, but I can tell you that my best year on gray fox was probably less than 10% dirt hole. They're all post sets and projection sets.
when you say projection, you mean like a bobcat rub set?
Similar, yeah.
It's kind of a walkthrough type approach?
Yeah.
Well, describe your dirt hole for us.
My dirt hole, I like about a 2, maybe a maximum 3-inch hole. Sometimes smaller. Sometimes smaller seems to work a little better because you make them focus a little more on that hole and a little less area to work the sides of it. And Gray's, he's going to work it from the back the first time. He's going to come in from the rear, you know. And they can be ornery, but they'll take a lot of guiding, man.
And they're not afraid of it.
No. That's about the only thing. I mean, the guiding keeps coyotes out of sets, too, because a lot of times coyotes will just shy away from it. That's just too flashy. They may come up to it, but they're not going to work it.
How deep's your hole?
I like at least 8 inches or so. Even deeper. Sometimes I'll go as deep as I can, you know, keep on getting.
So you're using, I'm assuming, a 1.5 or 1.75?
On those, actually, I ran the old style Vic 175s forever. But now, I'm using the Bridger 2s on just about everything, 2s and 3s. And surprisingly, you would think you were getting a lot of foot damage or everything from those. And I'm really not seeing that. As long as that trap is swiveled,
that can't be true. That's not what I read on the internet.
Well,
big
for me,
traps are bad.
Knock on wood. I haven't seen the. You know, I've heard the horror stories too. But I mean, I catch gray fox in number 3 Bridgers. And
are yours modified?
Yeah, or slightly modified. But I mean, they're not every bells and whistles, but you know, they're extra swivels. They are base plated, and some of them are laminated, some of them aren't. And I'm not seeing, you know, broken bones or whatever you want to call it. Most of that comes from not the trap. It's the animal in the trap that gets to that point. I don't know how far you want to get into that, but or how I think about that, but it's the swiveling avoids a lot of damage to the animal or harm to the animal, say.
Well, see, my theory on gray fox, because I run so many drags and I use bigger traps, and because I don't get paid for gray fox. I'm not targeting gray fox. I see very little damage, and I think it's because I'm running all that chain and they can't bind that thing up.
I think the same thing. Like when you're short change, if you have multiple swivels, as long as that trap doesn't bind, and he gets like a reverse bend, or you know, he torques his body some way, or contorts his body some way, and it doesn't spin, that's when I think you have the potential for the harm to the animal.
I think, yeah, I mean, we're in total agreement on that.
Yeah.
You know, because you get a stock trap, and you got basically one swivel on there if you get any grass, or if you get a little bit of grass, and you're just relying on the one up at the base plate.
Yeah. I think 3 minimum is a good start. You could get even crazier and do more, but I think 3 is sufficient.
I keep waiting for someone to make a chain that's just swivels. If it was just like 1.5 times more than regular chain, that's what I'd buy.
There you go.
Just straight swivels. There you can go. We can just put you to work putting swivels together.
Yeah, it'd probably end up kinking up there worse than a chain, but
it may. You really could. You'd have to put a link in between each one.
Between each one, yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Anybody out there looking for something to put on the trapping market, I don't know if you'll make any money, but you'll sell a bunch of it.
I don't know. It sounds like it'd be awful expensive. But.
Oh, I'm sure it would be. So I'm picturing you've got your smaller hole. Mm-hmm. You got it on an angle. Are you putting it against the backing to start with, or do you move stuff up?
I do use backings, but you know, I'm a believer in not using a whole lot of backing. But on the gray fox, you probably do need to use a little bit more, just because if not, he's going to try to work it from the opposite side of the angle of the hole, just because they're ornery.
And you're putting your trap up close.
Yeah, I like crowding it.
Now, some of the pictures I saw in there on your thing is snow.
Yeah.
And that's from Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We get it every once in a while.
So. How do you keep your traps working when it gets that cold? This is like rapid fire questions. This is how you do the hose thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I do use peat moss, just because in Virginia we don't have a whole lot of that kind of weather, snow, but we are notoriously faced with freeze thaw, which I think it'd be easier to work with a totally frozen trap bed than it would be this freeze thaw thing, because I mean, that's just That's just a pain in the butt.
Dude, when I was trapping in Alaska, it was 20 degrees below zero every day.
Yep.
They may be 60 below, and it may be 18, but I mean, you can count on 20 below zero every day in Fairbanks, or you used to could. I didn't understand the difficulty about trapping in cold weather. Your trap's 20 below, the snow's 20 below, everything's 20 below. Nothing froze up unless you put water on it.
There you go.
You know, so I didn't have that issue. I got back, I went to New Mexico one time and it was hot in the day and it would freeze at night and I about pulled my hair out.
Yeah.
So you're basically using peat moss just to keep it to fire.
Right.
Yeah. Top coating?
Yeah, I do. I actually put a light sift of dry dirt that I pre-sifted. I hate hauling dirt, but if it's like that, I usually keep a couple 55-gallon drums of sifted dirt that I'll pull off of that, because I find, especially for my coyotes, they don't like stepping on peat moss.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like it. And I'll always put it. A lot of times, you know, you'll get that, even if that'll absorb a little bit of the moisture there, and you come in and you can flip that off. But I'm telling you, like, it's 40, 50 degrees during the day and it goes down to 15 at night. It's something you just got to play with. But the trap will still go off. As long as you got that trap bedded, it's good and solid. And my trap beds, I use the bowl shape, and I try to keep my trap totally, every point's touching hard ground, not disturbed ground. And you have a layer of that peat moss between the ground and the trap. I have very little problem with that, with conditions that I face in Southeast Virginia, which aren't as harsh as most people get winter-wise. I mean, it gets cold, but we don't get the cold like north or stuff like that. People would laugh at what I would call cold.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, my winter's like 90 degrees, so.
Yeah.
So go ahead and run us through, if you don't mind, your projection set. You got my curiosity up on that. Why did you start playing with that?
Trapping a lot of crop planted hedgerows and limbs that fell in, or trees, or pretty much limbs that fell out of trees in the hedgerows, and the farmer come along and they would either chainsaw them off, just sticking out, or either just push them up in there with the front end loader and they'd just be sticking out. And I just started setting where they would just poke out like that, you know, no more than, you know, 8, 10, 12 inches above the ground. I would just bed a trap right in front of it and put my lure up on there. You know, mostly I was using urine. A lot of them I just did scent post, you know, urine scent post there. And I mean, that's
a tall pea for a gray fox.
Well, yeah, but some of it was a multi. That's just saying, it's a multi set.
I'm just screwing with you.
But that is true. That is true for that. But no, on the urine post, I wouldn't have nearly like that. The projection, I would use Food Curiosity or even Gland on there, and it was just like one of those silly sets. You didn't know why it kept working, but once it kept working, you just kept doing it.
So, okay, now my question for you is, I need to test your logic and thought ability here.
Uh-oh.
Your best year was using projection sets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way you said that, it's making me think that's not what you majority do now.
No, it's not. I trap a little different. I don't have as many hedgerows like that. And I think I might have got too smart for myself, you know, a little bit. I still use them. It's just not a set that I go to. And another thing, I don't have the same amount of gray fox.
I'm thinking on that one.
So, well, yeah, like I said, I might have got too smart for myself too. So I'll be upfront with that. It is, but
well, I think really, everybody tries new stuff, and they. I've got some stuff I'm going to be trying in Texas here on cats, and it's either going to be really good or it's going to be a lot of waste of time.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't know till you try it.
Yeah.
But if it works, I'm probably not going to, you know, I might stick with that a while, but.
Yeah.
So you're not doing any type of, so when I think of projection set, I think of like when I do a classic projection set for bobcats. I've never really done them a lot for gray fox. Mm-hmm. I'm giving them a trail or blocking to guide them in. So it sounds to me like you're blending a trap in and leaving it open.
Yep.
And you're in, well, you know, one thing about a gray fox, if you get it off the ground, at least they're not sitting there screwing with you. And you're, do you think that they're physically rubbing that stuff on them? Or they're just going
I'm sure some of that is done. I would think so. But I caught reds at that too, but I primarily just had a greater population of grays. But yeah, I don't know the logic behind it, but it's no more, it's redneck logic. Works, do it. Don't work, don't do it.
Well, I wish we had some of that in Washington.
Yeah, that's true. You need a lot more than that.
What do you think about this government shutdown since I brought that up?
Oh, Lord have mercy. Or hit that button over there and we can talk about it. But I don't know if we should go into that or not.
Okay, I'll leave that out.
Yeah.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left. And I want to talk about what you're most famous for.
What is that?
Massive mouse trapping.
Yeah, I've been known to catch a few thousand.
So, I mean, you showed me pictures where it looks like, if someone would catch that many raccoon in a day or coyotes in a day or otter in a day, they would be on the front page of every hunting magazine in the country. So, now, you were doing that around your quail.
Yeah, after the grow season and the grow buildings are empty, and the remaining feed in the feed hoppers in the field, the mice just turn on like a magnet. So in that little transition time between the buildings being empty and being cleaned out, the mice explode. And I just capitalize on that.
So what kind of traps are you running?
Just your regular old homeowner specials, the little Victor snap traps with the yellow pans.
Why the yellow pans?
Because I blind set them along the walls there a lot. And it's just like a big pan. They just run across it and snap.
So how many have you caught in a day?
In a day, probably pushing 500 plus there is probably my best days.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and
that's like long lining mice.
Yeah, but you know the funny thing is, and you know we talked about this once before, I told you, how many traps do I use? Like, you would think a whole lot, but not. I started out with 42 traps. And, I mean, Victor makes a good little mouse trap, but they were never intended to catch that many. So once you start catching them, they start falling apart. There's the little hinge rivets there. Mm-hmm. They just pull out the wood. They're just not made to be used that many times. They used to catch a couple of mice in the kitchen, and most people throw that trap away or something. But I got down to the low 30s of traps, and I was catching, you know, hundreds just in
a day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you're basically setting them up against the wall.
Yeah, mostly blind set, but like I think I've told you before, I dabble with seeing what things that they were interested in lure wise or whatever, trying to add a little enhancement there. And most people are going to say, "Oh my God, I can't believe you said that." But peanut butter, I say that's for old ladies and kids' lunch boxes, because I've seen more mice come up to peanut butter on a mouse trap, stick their neck out, and turn around and walk away. Now, I know, everybody in the world has caught at least a couple handfuls of mice on peanut butter, but I just saw it happen too many times.
I didn't know that.
But I could tell you my secret, what I found to work best. I don't know if I should or not, but I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt anything.
No one's listening.
Yeah, nobody's listening. But I tell you, the best thing for mice on that is bacon grease. Just good old bacon grease and mouse urine. I blended that in the wood on the trap, and they just, that's like a confidence thing. They just come right in.
Now how are you getting, I know how because you told me earlier, but you say mouse urine, there's going to be people online trying to buy mouse urine.
Well, yeah, my fortune, which is, you know, my fortune, I'm with chicken urine. I'm going to figure out a way to extract chicken urine, and that's going to be my $1 million right there. But the mouse urine, a lot of times when you catch a mouse, he'll flip the trap over. You're seeing him lay on his back, and he's got just a couple little beads of urine. Just, I guess it's just a, you know, reactive body function when he gets smacked there. But You take those and you just rub that on that wood under the pan on those traps. And you do that enough and it builds up. And probably those few drops are sufficient. But and I think it just removes any fear because they smell and they come in and investigate that. But I've tried some silly stuff. You know, we talked about it earlier. I tried some silly stuff just to see what would and what wouldn't. And bacon grease, hands down, is pretty much the best that I come across.
Everybody like everything likes pig, man.
Yep, bacon. Yeah. Well, you know that last night. I proved my. You say the word bacon, and my mind wanders.
Yeah, we're at the steakhouse, and she's asking what he wants on his potatoes or something, and he's all into the conversation, and she hits bacon, and you would have thought someone shocked him with something. He just like or had a stroke. I mean, he just like.
Bacon. Like Homer Simpson with donut bacon.
Yeah, I mean, and then we'd have to get his attention and keep him going. I mean, just the word. Yeah.
It didn't hurt that she was kind of cute, too, though.
Well,
good looking girls and bacon in the same conversation is enough to throw this old country boy off kilter.
So, what do you do with all those mice?
I grind them up. Yeah. And
you sell them in your lure business?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Don't have the same access to the volume anymore, but this year I've sold some just because I had them and the availability on the market wasn't there, so I just kind of, you know, I eased up some of what I had and let them out there. People were buying them. I don't have much left, but.
Well, you were outside doing something. I sold one of them today for you.
Yeah, you did. He was even nice enough to leave the money there, too.
I didn't even take a commission, man.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that, by the way.
Yeah, that negative 1%. You owe me money.
You know, the way that you're doing this, because people, I mean, surely anybody that's thinking about predators has to understand that it's going to be hard to beat mice.
Yeah.
Because that's their natural.
It's natural. They have a very distinct odor, too. It's very distinct odor.
Oh, there ain't no doubt. You know, and I've thought about working out a deal with our local co-op with all that feed
right. And
stuff in there, or horse barns or whatever, and just collecting a bunch. I get them around the house because when they cut the cornfields next to my house,
they
and that lure
in.
Shed is sitting
in.
There, they all go, holy cow, that's the gun, you know, the buffet sitting over there.
But for everybody who's interested in catching mice are one thing, but I have found that rats don't seem to have the same appeal for some reason. I think a mouse shines where a rat doesn't when it comes to a predator for some reason. It's a different odor, too. The big old, like, I guess they're Norway rats or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're as appealing to predators as the mice. And I could be all wrong.
So you kept them separate to test that?
Yeah,
somehow?
But I haven't had nearly the number of rats because I've had to catch rats elsewhere. I don't have the rats, thank goodness, but yeah, I just got the mice. But, yeah, I noticed a difference. I noticed a little bit of a difference. And I've had people ask me that. And they said, yeah, I've kind of noticed that, too. So that's one in one that makes two there. So it's probably some others that have noticed something similar. I mean, but put it out there, I guarantee you something will hit it. It's close enough, but
yeah. There
is a difference.
Yeah. Well, is there anything that you can think of as we close of just wisdom of the possum skinner that you would want to tell someone that's either been trapping or just getting into it? Because there's a lot of new people that find this radio show.
I do. One thing that I truly believe and I see, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing. It's a lot of information out there nowadays. And if you're just getting into it, I mean, you're bombarded with it. And everybody buys DVDs, whether they're yours or whoever. And that's some good, solid information there. But as long as you know how to comprehend what you're listening to. But I see a lot of people, they want to emulate Clint Locklear. They want to be, they're going to go take what they see in a video here, there, and they're going to, instead of just listening to what you're teaching them, they want to try to copy you, which is the same difference. I mean, it sounds odd what I'm saying. People aren't their own people anymore. You know, they're trying to be something that they're not. Just be yourself. And develop your own style and take a little bit from you and somebody else and whatever and develop your own style.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you just listen to this, and this and just try to copy and not learn, actually learn, but just copy, I think you're setting yourself up for frustration.
Well, I think what you just said is the important thing that I've noticed. You can watch, if you came out with a trapping DVD, for instance, and you're going to show how to catch gray fox, you watch the video and you see he puts trap here, he puts lure here, he's on the edge, and it's kind of like a formula, A, B, C, and you want D to equal dead animal. So A, B, and C, and you catch an animal, so you got D, which is equals dead animal. Well, all around the country, stuff acts very, very different. And you may be doing stuff that just is not coming across on video, especially your locations. And I think when a lot of guys, they get into trapping and they're looking for, because I get phone calls all the time on a subject that would be literally a book. And they want it in two sentences so they can go out and do something. But it's the learning of the animal. It's the learning of the location, the time of the year, what the weather's going to screw with you on. All that is you're seeing on the video, but you're not in the guy's head going, okay, I know it's going to rain next week. This set works here because of this, but it ain't worth a flip everywhere else. And, you just can't see all that.
Yeah.
And if you just copy, like what you're saying.
Yeah. And, sometimes people can't even watch and repeat exactly how you did it. For example, we watched somebody try to set a trap today that you showed this person exactly how to do it. And I mean, within 10 seconds of that trap changing from your hands to their hands, they totally were holding the trap entirely different and did nothing like you showed them how to do it 10 seconds earlier. You're not comprehending. You're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
There, something was lost there. And I think that's what a lot of people, and I think that sets up for frustration. And it's easy to get frustrated while you're trapping.
So when's your DVD coming out? I need to start copying you.
No, it'll never happen.
It'll never happen?
Never happen.
You said you'd never do an interview.
It'll never happen. Yeah, I'm fine. I've filmed, video stuff for Newt Sterling. We did a hog video and stuff like that. But I'm pretty much better a behind the camera guy. I'm better for radio interviews now that I can tell you that right now.
Well, as long as you keep your hat on, we're good.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, man, I appreciate you finally. I've been trying to get you to do this, for 2 years?
It's been longer than that, actually.
And you just keep saying no. So you being the fun-loving wannabe prankster you were, you shouldn't have ever said, well, I'll interview you.
That's true. That's true. Like, that did backfire,
go ahead,
but
boy.
I found really quickly that it was better to be on this side than asking the question. Well, I could have come up with some doozies to ask you, but I don't think it would have been a trapping-related show. So.
Well, I tell you, I mean, like I told you, you can embarrass me if you want to, but I got the editing program.
There you go. So now it's time to talk about your footwear.
Man, would you leave my sandals alone?
Yeah.
That's my driving shoes.
Yeah, I hear you.
And now, since I know that aggravates Norm, I wear them every time I know he's going to be around, just because I know it aggravates
him. Well,
that's
true, too. That's true.
But yeah. I appreciate you taking, because I know it's late and it's been a long weekend.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it. Yep.
Y'all going to go get some more bacon?
Going more bacon.
You ain't going to the bacon. You're going with them girls over there.
Hey, it's a college town. What can I do? I mean... Can't ask them all to leave, although they may want to once I get there. But yeah, but no, I enjoyed it. I'm glad we went ahead and took time to sit down. I don't think we covered a whole lot of anything, but.
Well, if nothing else, if we can get you back on Facebook, at least we accomplished something.
Yeah, we can try that. I don't know if Facebook really cares whether I'm there or not, but.
Well, I do need the email so it goes to somebody instead of, whatever they've been emailing you from.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, they send me text message alerts that, you've got 46 messages and 3 pokes or whatever. And I'm thinking, why are you taunting me with telling me this and I can't even access my account?
Well, see, I posted something on you yesterday because I knew you couldn't respond.
I know, it was something sinister because you said, you really can't access Facebook. And then he just sat over there and he was just grinning and thumb typing, so... I guess I'll have to find a computer to figure out what's going on there.
Well, man, I will see you probably. I probably won't see you, I guess, till next spring somewhere.
It might be. You never know. It might be somewhere in between.
Are you going to pull a Newt where you just show up out of money and you need to trap something so you can get back home?
It might be possible. Might be possible. Yeah, Cindy cooks good, and you like butter and bacon, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I always travel with my own pillow, so. I even got sheets, too, so you don't have to worry about that. Take care of that.
Well, if you're coming my way and you need it, we'll figure out something to do.
There you go. Out in the lure shed.
Oh, yeah, I can put you to work in the lure shed.
Yeah. Place to sleep, too.
Well, then, before we leave, as I said, I brought this up, do you have a website?
Yeah, but it's in the process of being built. Yep.
Well, what's it going to be? Because people will be hearing this for
It's rnrbaitsandlures.com.
rnrbaitlures.com. Okay.
Yep.
And if they need to contact you because they're interested, do you have like a catalog or?
No, actually, all that's it's kind of in the same process as the website. Yeah.
What, do you want to give out your phone number so someone want to call and try your lure? I'm trying to give you a bone here.
I know, I hear you that, but right now I'm not ready to do that. I don't want to do that right now, but I will get back with you on that if that's okay. Yeah,
we got to have a marketing class 101, brother.
We've already had this conversation privately. So, you know, he just sucker punched me, folks. So.
Hey, what are friends for?
Yeah, but no, that's baby steps right now, you know. But
baby steps. Yeah. Okay, man. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, appreciate it, Clint.